This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
It's time for 5 on. Layla Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you 5 topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got 5 on it. Number 1.
Of the Cubs' 3 biggest deadline needs, which is starting pitching, relief pitching, or third base, how many do they address at the trade deadline?
How many do I think they address, or how many will they address, or how many do I want them to address?
All the above.
I need a ruling.
Will they address?
Will they? Starting pitching. Second, probably relief pitching, because that'll be the most movie thing. You know, when I say movie, I mean like move hyphen Y. Like, everybody's going to want to move a starting relief pitcher. It's just what you do. It's like if you need a hit, you know, you need a trade. You're like, pull it on your shirt by your neck, like Dave Chappelle show. I feel like that's the case. Like, the relievers, they get moved. That's just what happens. Like, you just do it to do it at times. And I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Number 3 is third base. The entire collection of Major League Baseball teams, I think, outside of like 3, need a third baseman. So that's why I think that's going to be the most expensive trade aspect for any team. But how they get the starting pitching, we've been trying to figure that out all morning. When Jed says get creative, do you mean big league talent for big league talent? Is there somebody who has multiple years of control who maybe another team really likes that you might have to part with? Yeah, there's going to be, I think, a lot of questions asked when it comes to that part of it.
I think everything's on the table. For me, if I had to say what I'm most confident they address, it would be the starting pitching and the bullpen arm. Because I don't think they necessarily are in dire need of a third baseman. It would just be nice if they had a third baseman that they felt they were comfortable with going into the postseason. And right now, I think they feel like, could they improve at third base? Yes. Does it mean they love Matt Shaw any less? No. But if you can get Eugenio Suarez, get Eugenio Suarez. Like, I think it's pretty simple. But I think starting pitching and high leverage arms are probably the 2 biggest priorities for them.
Correct. Like, if you're sitting there saying to yourself, is Matt Shaw, okay, they were going to start either Alex Bregman or Eugenio Suarez in a career year ahead of me. Oh, that's not bad. You know, you're like, think about who you would be sitting for. So in that case, yeah, the compliment is still high. Ooh. I would hope that it doesn't do too much damage to your big league career after that.
One thing with Suarez, the price is going up. The guy will not stop hitting homers.
And then, you know, I'll play this. I think we have time for it with Marshall tomorrow. But I did talk to Ozzie Guillen that night after we did the Eugenio Suarez stalking segment. And he again went on and on about how good of a guy he is. And you're just like, man, I just want you to win every World Series ever. You know, I mean, that's an extreme example. But still, you just want the best for him after you hear him talk. You're really happy for the guy.
Good player, good dude.
Number 2.
After throwing 6 shutout innings against the Pirates on Sunday, did White Sox right-hander Aaron Civale do anything to help his trade value?
I asked this question, and I know that the resume on Aaron Civale is not great, and I also know that he asked to be traded. And in his ask to be traded, the Brewers were like, okay, cool. We're going to trade you to the White Sox for Andrew Vaughn. And at the time, I thought that that was a pretty punitive statement on both. But even though Aaron Civale's resume recently has not been ideal, I still think if the White Sox can flip him for somebody, knowing that that was a recent start of his, you should do it. That, I mean, I'm sorry, Aaron Civale, you're probably living out of an Airbnb for the rest of 2025. But in this case, I think it always helps to have your most recent game be a good one.
Sidebar, I don't think the Milwaukee Brewers have lost a game since Andrew Vaughn has been on their roster. There you go.
What? Like that's yeah. That's the remarkable part, is it not?
They're very good at the find the right platoon for the right guy. Like I don't think anybody thought Andrew Vaughn would be a platoon player, but now he is, and it's working out for them. To answer the original question, do I think he's increased his trade value? No. I think his trade value is what his trade value is. Like, I think teams will say, cool, you had a solid start against the Pirates. Do I think he gets moved? Probably, because there are just a million teams that need starting pitching. And a team will say, sure, he's fine depth in the back of our rotation.
Yeah, he is one of those guys who I would consider movie. Yeah. 5 2/3 his last time before that against Cleveland, gave up 4 earned runs, walked 2. Okay, so he only walked 2.
Can you take the ball every fifth day and get through 5 innings?
4 innings against Toronto, but Toronto's very good.
Low bar, though.
And it was a rain-shortened game in 7. 5 innings against the Dodgers, only gave up 2 earned runs.
Do not expect the haul.
Number 3.
It's 5 on it here for Raheem and Harris. Russ Dorsey is in. Question number 3, we're shifting to football. Which position group on the Bears are you the most confident about this year?
Most confident. I gave this a lot of thought on my sports walk to work today, and I debated it amongst myself. I almost feel bad saying it because it doesn't make sense on its face, but you're going to have to hear me out.
Okay.
I narrowed it down to tight ends and secondary.
Okay.
Secondary was my main vote because as much as people have talked about Tyreek Stevenson, myself included, yes, there were some self-discipline issues. And it wasn't just the taunting last season at the Hail Mary against Washington. It was also poking opposing receivers in the face mask in multiple games. Like, you think you would have learned your lesson after one? You got away with it in the Texans game? What are you doing that mess again? Like, the guy has a lot of unbridled energy that you're finding is, unfortunately, coming out in different ways during games that aren't the play. So, all of that said, I still think he's got an incredible amount of talent. So, therefore, for me, it was secondary. I feel like that's where the least amount of turnover is. Schematically, there's probably the least amount of change. Jalen Johnson, I assume, is going to be traveling with your WR1. So, I voted secondary.
I will go with the offensive line because I think if you look at them up and down, start from the interior, which they did in free agency, Drew Dahlman was the best center available. They got him. Joe Tooney has been one of the best guards in the entire NFL the last couple of seasons, an all-pro on Super Bowl teams. It's a really high bar. You're setting the standard for yourself as an offensive line. Then on the other side, Jonah Jackson didn't play as well in LA, but had some injuries. But knows Ben Johnson's system. It's a veteran, and I think a guy that knows the system, that's very important. And then on the outside, I think we're expecting a jump from Darnell Wright, as we talked about with Kevin Fishbane. And then on the other side, Braxton Jones is fine as a left tackle, but if Ozzie Trapillo, now that he's signed, looks like the guy where you're like, this is makes us the best offensive line possible, that should be the guy that starts. So I just think because of the talent on the interior, especially with Dahlman and Joe Tooney, I'm very confident in what that group is going to do.
So I'm kind of surprised that you guys didn't say wide receiver and mention them. How do you guys feel about the Bears wide receiver entering this year? You have DJ Moore, you have Romo Dunze, still needs to prove some things, and Luther Burden. I'm surprised you guys didn't mention that group.
But see how you just said still needs to prove some things, and that's your WR2 in this group if you look at it right now. That's why.
I think DJ and Rome are going to be very good. I just think the importance for me of giving Caleb time to even find those guys would put the O-line above them.
Ray, if you had a position group, who are you saying?
You know, I'm kind of with Russ here about the offensive line, just because you have that center position short up. I found myself like, yes, Russ, I'm with you. So I that's what I'm going to say. That would be my answer to this question.
No love for the secondary except
definitely
for
the
me?
Yes. The secondary I have confidence in for sure.
I want Jaquan Brisker to stay healthy, though, and Kyler Gordon.
Yeah, that is.
And I think that's a big part of it.
That is a piece of it.
I think my agreement with Russ is more me being a little drunk on Bears' excitement to see this thing go, especially under Ben Johnson, and just having competent pieces on that O-line is nice. Joe, it's a nice feeling
and
for once.
You have an all-pro on your offensive line. That's a big deal. Everybody doesn't have that.
Well, we just heard Kevin Fishbane. The 1950s was the last time the Bears had an All-Pro.
That you are one of, for everybody out there, if you don't, you're one of the two best players at your position in the NFL. That's across 32 teams. You are one of the two best.
847 says, I'm going there, quarterback. They wow. go on to say, let's face it, Williams did not have a bad year last season.
No, I don't disagree with that. 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, when me and you could have been the offensive coordinator. It's pretty solid.
When that's the blind stat, 20 touchdown passes, 6 interceptions, sure, that's decent on its face. But 68 sacks, I agree with the school of thought that sacks can be just as punitive, if not more, than interceptions.
He held the football a lot, but the offensive line was also very bad. I think it was a combination of the two.
And they say with a revamped line and real coaches...
I don't disagree with
the way we talk about the coaching. Real coaches, I feel good he'll have a great year. I understand that completely. And then 209 says it's impossible to project wide receiver and tight end depends on quarterback play. Yes and no. I am very confident that what we saw out of Cole Kmet last year was a function of your offense and the read progressions in the offense. There's no way Cole Kmet has as few targets per game in his position and how he was expected to be used. Ben Johnson's offense is different. But you can't tell me that the leaps and strides that Cole Kmet made prior to last season weren't an indication of your belief in his skill set.
I am as excited as anybody about Ben Johnson. But that real coach's comment from the texter, like, let us just make it plain, obviously. State the obvious here. This is Ben Johnson's first year as a head coach. And we don't know if it's going to take off running at the beginning. There may be a learning curve for him doing this job, and we have to be ready for that.
Sure, but we respect the resume.
And
that hasn't happened for us very often.
No, no doubt. No doubt. Absolutely. They got the best guy for the job for once.
Real coaches.
Real coaches.
It probably wasn't even a purposeful diss and just turned into one.
Number four.
How do we describe Scottie Scheffler's dominance in golf right now?
I wanted to ask this question because if you look at it and you start to put it together as to how strong his performances have been, it is outrageous when you consider the body of work together. It's not just that he's winning. It's that even when he's not at the top of the leaderboard, for example, Vegas and other places will still have him as the favorite to win the overall tournament, which is what happened on Saturday. As I understand, it was still minus 120 on Saturday. And then we saw him dominate the way he did. He's 111 under par in majors since the beginning of 2020. That's 46 shots better than anybody else in that span. What he's doing is not just impressive, it's consistent and dominant. Like, how do you put it up against guys like Rory McIlroy, for example, when he was in the prime of his career? That's how I feel about this. The man deserves his flowers.
I think unparalleled in sports right now. Like, when you look at what he's been able to do in his individual sport compared to any athlete in any sport right now, like, the closest I can say is probably what Katie Ledecky does in swimming, where there is nobody that comes close to her. I think that's what Scottie Scheffler has been able to do on the tour. Like, just, it's me and then it's everybody else.
It's just incredible. Like, it's funny because the quotes when people saw him get, you know, the slightest bit up, one fan says under his breath, bloody hell. Another one says this is over, because you just know that the man is only going to, he's linear in a world that is cyclical and not linear at all. Scottie Scheffler, I feel like, is the closest we can get to linear progress.
You're not making the Tiger comp, but there was a stretch where, like, golf was looking, to your point, for the next dude, and it was Rory or Jordan Spieth had his cup of coffee as being like, oh, this is the guy. And it just never worked out that way. And so I think golf is getting what it's been looking for post-Tiger dominance era.
It's just not as overtly done. Like, you're for not sure. Like, when I think of Tiger Woods and facing him on a Sunday, yeah, and how the
shirt would scare the rest of the group,
and the collapse that would happen if you were in that pairing on a Sunday.
You see that red?
It's over.
You hear the Undertaker music.
Yeah, that's it. Church.
Yeah.
But what he's done is just incredible. Like, 46 shots better than anybody else in that span in majors since the beginning of 2020. I don't even know that I'm putting it into words in a way that gives it the credit it deserves.
Number five.
Last question on Five on It. It's usually a life question. This one, it is a life question. I have a couple weddings coming up in August, and I have to give some gifts to some people. And usually I don't go with a gift. I go with cold, hard cash. Here's the question. How much money should you give as a gift at a wedding?
All right. So this is a great question, Robbie. I just came back from a wedding a couple of weeks ago, and you're right on the money, no pun intended, with just giving cash. Because if you really ask the couple, they're always going to tell you, dude, just don't worry about it. Like, get the money. Like, it's fine. Or if you want to combo it with the money and something on their registry, cool. But how much? I would say, at a minimum, pay for your plate at the reception. You know what I mean? So I know there's a variance depending on where it is, what they have, but I'd say between $100 and $200 is probably a nice range.
Well, unfortunately, $200 doesn't cover a lot of plates at the receptions now.
That's the other part. So, but like, if you're going by your, you are taking a plus one, yeah?
Don't worry about it. Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So will there be canoodling?
All right, Layla. That's enough from you. If you're going to have a plus one, you got to bump the number. That's what I would say.
He's right about that. Right. Also, I went to Alyssa Bergamini's wedding over the weekend, and her dad, Jim, is a huge score head. He's a big listener, so shout out to Jim. And Rhonda, of course, is a massive sports fan. So congratulations to Alyssa and Matt, and also Jim, thanks for listening all the time, and Rhonda, thanks for supporting. And I do think it varies. Number one, yeah, if you have a plus one, you have to cover your plus one, or your plus one has to bring a gift. Because if it's that serious, then they probably know they got to bring a gift to the wedding or contribute to the couple cost, the invite cost. I agree with you about the cash. Growing up in the South, like, cash in envelopes was not a thing. That, like, it was usually paired with like a reception, a gift off the registry, and there were like pricier gifts on the registry. Or for example,
China set.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Like, yes. That. So many. And then also, whatever happens at the shower. So I think the shower gift does factor into what you will ultimately give somebody. But yeah, I mean, I do think at least 100 is a good benchmark. But if you're a little older and your job is a little more established and you can't give more, I usually try to.
My man Robbie said, don't worry about the plus one. I'm rolling in there solo dolo.
I go 150. 150 is my number.
That's a good number.
Do single guys ever have it bad at weddings? I feel like usually if you're a single guy at a wedding, there's always somebody you can chat up.
I was at a group of table with all ladies at this wedding I was at recently. It went well for the boy.
Meat?
No.
Wait a second. You were the only guy at the table?
Yes.
How many people were at the table?
There was me and 9 ladies.
Yeah. What wonderful sick friend did that for you?
Shout out to my guy, Andrew. He did it intentionally.
Yes, he did. Yeah. Now, that's a picture I would like to see. When we describe your social life, that's it. We have more to come here on Raheem and Harris with Russ Dorsey and for Marshall on 670 The Score. We need to address a couple of note-taking items and really homework items, housekeeping, if you will, that the Bears got out of the way. A little designation list, a surprising amount of people on the non-football injured list, and also put into perspective the importance of Luther Burden's contract. So we will do all of that next here on Raheem and Harris on The Score.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Layla Raheemi, Marshall Harris, Raheemi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
The 2025 NFC North Champions.
Oh, boy.
Chicago Bears.
Oh, boy.
Select Luther Burden III.
Ooh.
Wide receiver. Mkhitaryan.
He's the most talented player on the board, and we think he's an electric player, playmaker, highly competitive, and the run after the catch is special. So when you add that to the group that we have, things get pretty exciting.
That was a little Luther Burden montage, and we appreciate being able to talk about him. Here on Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score with Russ Dorsey in for Marshall Harris today. Russ, of course, the baseball insider for Yahoo Sports, but a big Bear fan. And that was a headline that came out over the weekend. Nice to see, as we saw Shamar Turner, the first of the Bears' second-round picks, to get his contract done. Then it was Ozzie Trapillo, and then it was the Bears agreeing to a fully guaranteed deal with the number 39 pick overall, Luther Burden III. And that was the final member they had to agree with in their 2025 draft class. We know that there was a lot of discussion around the league as to how much of second round picks contracts were going to be guaranteed. The Texans set the market on that. They decided to guarantee their pick, and so that caused, appropriately, a chain reaction. Do these guys deserve to have a lot of their money guaranteed? I think so. I'm glad to see that the league ultimately agreed when it came to a lot of that.
Yeah, and I think you looked at, there was this staring contest between these second round picks and these teams, because once you set the precedent, you're going to have a lot of those guys that, whoa, wait a minute. Like, why would I sign this deal that wasn't guaranteed or didn't have a majority guarantee when these two other guys were able to do that? And some of those players, better players than the guys that got the fully guaranteed deal. So I think you're going to continue to see this. And I think it was interesting, like some were 85%, some were fully guaranteed, some were 87% guaranteed. So I think as time goes on here, you're definitely going to start seeing more and more of this. But training camp was starting, rookies reporting, and you couldn't have a majority of the second round picks in the NFL, 30 of 32 at one point, not showing up for camp, because those are supposed to be impact players on your roster.
Absolutely, that's it. Those are people whose expectation is to either start,
these dudes are playing,
or be,
yes,
very close to starting. Like, you expect Luther Burden to be a significant role player in this Bears offense. I wanted to point out, Brad Biggs is back. I love it because there were a lot of replies to Biggsy, who took some time off from social media. And one of the first replies was, Brad Biggs talks football with you. That was a reply. I was so happy to see it. So he was on this morning with Mully and Haw talking about why it's important that Luther Burden got that guarantee contract.
It's a little bit more of a guarantee for Luther. The bigger significance is the precedence, right? And for agents and for guys that'll be in the second round of the draft class in 2026 and so on, because once precedent is established, you know, the NFLPA and the agents work really hard to go off of that. And that's why the teams were working very hard to go off the precedent previously that there hadn't been full guarantees that far into round two. How much money are we actually talking about? Like, at the end of the day, how much more money is this for some of these round two picks in terms of a guarantee? Like, which the guarantee for a rookie contract, you know, that's like worst case scenario money for a guy that comes in, bombs out quickly, ends up on a second team quickly, doesn't work out there. You know, it's one of those things where, okay, how much money is he collecting? Talking to a guy with another club late last night, he said, you know, at the end of the day, some of these agreements are going to mean, you know, maybe $1 million for a guy. But if Luther Burden is a player like the Bears expect, he would have gotten all that money anyway. If some of these other guys in round two that are getting high guarantees, higher than usually given to players in those slots, are players that the teams hope, you know, it's not really there's no difference in what the teams are paying. But it's good for Luther. It's good for the Bears. They get the deal done. He's there over the weekend. He can get acclimated and hopefully be ready to roll Wednesday morning.
That was Brad Biggs on this morning with Mully and Haw. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score, talking about what's left now before Bears officially report to camp in whole tomorrow. So the other part of this, Russ, that I think is valid is that they view him as a practical first-round pick. And I understand your teams are going to use the financial tools that you have in front of you to help stay under the salary cap, mm-hmm. most importantly. Something happens, then that would be an issue. They're confident about him anyway. And when you consider that within, what, 48 hours, 76 hours, something, 72 hours, something like that, you had your three draft picks out of that second round all signed. That indicates to me there wasn't a lot of hesitation in making that happen.
Yeah, and I think you just did. I think no team wanted to be the first team to do it. I think all these teams understood that at some point it needed to happen, but somebody has to be the first one, and then you could consistently see team one, 45 minutes later, another team, and then another team once you started to see what the numbers would be. But I think as far as Luther Burden specifically, you have a guy that is extremely talented, and you talk about them viewing him as a first-round pick. Like, I imagine on their board, they said, yeah, this is a dude. And he has a similar skill set to both DJ Moore and Marrone Madunze when you talk about a guy who can catch the football and then do something with it after he catches it. And so to the point from earlier of being confident in the wide receiver group, I think I have a high expectation for them, but I just want to see how it looks first before I just can say, yes, 100%, I'm more excited about these guys than anybody else on that roster.
Yeah, and I feel like that's fair. I even kept my expectations for Caleb Williams reasonable, even though he was the first overall pick, because you just have to. You know what is ahead of them, and you know that typically there are hurdles when it comes to being a 1-1 because, well, your team was bad enough to have to draft one. A couple of other items of note that were taking place over the weekend. Case Keenum was originally placed on the active non-football injury list. Then the Bears shortly announced that he was no longer on it. Can't say the same for running back Ian Wheeler. That's a concern because we've all been wondering what he's going to contribute to the running back room, given that he had an injury last season. Wide receiver Jahdae Walker was also placed on the active non-football injury list. And the biggest name, Jalen Johnson. So that's where we're trying to wade through this. And I want to be very careful because I think a lot of people's thought process is to go to the Eberflus camp where Jalen Johnson started practicing with the second and the third team. And
what's that?
And it was some sort of punitive issue, or there was the concern, you know, Chase Claypool started the season on the PUP list. We know how that turned out. I don't get the same indication from this. There is most likely an injury. I'm going to keep it simple. But here's what Brad Biggs had to say about that.
What's going on with Jalen Johnson? Does he have a sniffle? Is it a serious leg injury? What do you know?
I would imagine it's pretty minor. Like, he was in town for his football camp last weekend. Looked fine, right? If you saw some of the video, it could be a minor soft tissue injury. No, NFI and contract have that has nothing to do with each other. They paid him not long ago to make him happy, and that was as you recall, that was a prolonged process, right? They thought they were close to a deal during the season, and it didn't happen until after the season. Obviously, there's been some cornerbacks paid since, but that's the nature of the NFL. You've seen that happen at plenty of other positions as well, edge rusher, wide receiver, the quarterback market's always going up. So Jalen Johnson being on NFI has nothing to do with his contract, which he signed not long ago.
I appreciate the perspective from Brad Biggs. I also understand that based on the domino effect that has happened in the league where you are seeing extensions for players who are earning their keep. When I heard Jalen Johnson on the Rich Eisen show, I thought that he was jovial about it. I thought that he was joking around. I could see why even the joke might imply that there might be something different there. But when I heard that, I did not think that that was something serious or that it would be related to why he's starting camp on that list. We'll know more tomorrow, obviously, but I try not to connect anything previous from what we've seen before.
Yeah, and you're just hoping that it is not a serious injury or something that lingers in the camp, because I think that's the one thing when teams get to training camp is the guy that has the injury and it just lingers and lingers and lingers, and then the entire position group or the entire defense in this case can't see what it looks like as a whole. And I think that was the one thing with Luther Burden during the rookie minicamp, is just, he looked really good, and then he had a soft tissue injury, and then you really couldn't see it. And that time is really valuable, especially since you had the contract disputes across the NFL for a lot of these second round guys. So hopefully it's not too serious.
Agreed. You're listening to Raheem and Harris. That is Russ Dorsey in for Marshall on the 670 The Score and iHeart Radio apps, also Odyssey app as well. And when we come back, I think a little more baseball talk. We're getting you ready also for our special guest at the top of the hour, 1 o'clock. Curtis Granderson is joining us, and that's going to be a lot of fun. He's in for two segments, so we get to talk to him about his consistent and just endless work in the community, a really fun initiative he's got going on. And in the meantime, there was more from what Jed Hoyer had to say over the weekend, not just on Friday, but also on Sunday with the marquee broadcast, talking about what it's going to take to get a deal done at the trade deadline, now just 10 days away. We examine next on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
I mean, I think we're a very talented team. We can absolutely get better. We can fill some holes and we can do some things, but we have to keep playing well. But yeah, absolutely. I think that I think every year the teams that make the postseason, a handful of teams, you know, have a really good chance to win. I think we put ourselves in that position, but we're going to have to keep playing the way we have been.
I agree with Jed Hoyer. That was what he had to say on Sunday on the marquee broadcast. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. Russ Dorsey is in for Marshall on this Monday, and the Cubs enjoy a 59-40 record. But the problem is, so do the Brewers. As they sneak up behind us, like Taker. Yeah. The amount of times where that actually plays in my head is not even as, it's more than what we've even played today.
Winners of 10 consecutive games, the Milwaukee Brewers. Like, they are not going anywhere, folks.
Where's the Cubs where's the Cubs 10 game win streak? Why don't they get one of those?
Hey, we need one of those. Come on. I'd love to see it.
Got any more of those 10-game win streaks?
Here's my thing about long winning streaks. They're not always the best thing. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but...
Go on.
I think of a couple years ago, the Cleveland Guardians, they won a lot of games, and they kind of peaked at the wrong time. I'm not saying that's going to happen with the Milwaukee Brewers, but you see that happen, like, when teams go on that really long winning streak, it's like, we couldn't have done this in September going into the postseason. But it's just something to be mindful of.
Wait, well, we can't just order up a second 10-game win streak? We can't order one?
Oh, for the Cubs? I don't think it works like
that. How do you feel
about... Can I go to the MLB app and order that? No?
Can I order, it's not like Uber Eats, right?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Can I interest you in a 21-game losing streak?
No!
Because the next year, your team is like, hey, look how we don't have one of those.
How about...
Please don't.
You know what's better than...
But isn't it nice that there's not one this year?
Yes.
What about a winner of 10 of 12, Ray?
I like that.
Can I interest you in that?
I'll take that.
I think that is... We get caught up in the consecutive wins, but if you can win a 10, 15, 17 of 24, you're putting yourself in a really good position to play baseball, really good baseball over a stretch.
That's what the Brewers are doing, aren't they?
Well, yeah, and I believe that's what we heard Craig Counsell say last week, the stacking wins, and that's very necessary.
So our intrepid clubhouse reporter, friend of the show, Sam Bernero, the photographer, just took a picture of Ben Brown arriving at Wrigley.
He's returned.
How about that? Dude, Sam's the eyes and ears. She's our clubhouse person.
Chicago TMZ right there.
Pretty much. And she always takes flattering pictures of people.
Yeah, she takes good photos.
Everybody always looks so glam when they're arriving to work.
Very much so.
Could we see a world where Ben Brown is in your playoff rotation? Can we still live in that world?
This year, no.
No, you cannot.
Robbie... Josh Giddey energy is just going to other projects?
No, I'm just saying, he's back. It obviously means something good is happening with him, or there is a need.
Let's
think about who's... Ryan Brazier is starting today.
let's play Robbie scenario out in your mind. If
that's, I'm really sorry.
If Ben Brown,
my brain, who
is in the Cubs playoff rotation, that means what? You got nothing at the deadline. That's exactly what that means.
Pandemonium.
And so for me, if I'm thinking the Cubs don't make an, or the, I'm thinking of the Cubs postseason rotation, of everybody that they have, I think it's not a thing. I know Shota Yamanaga, Matthew Boyd are in there, right? Then player X that has not been acquired yet. Jameson Taillon is expected to be back at some point in mid or late August. So if there's another guy that you need to start a game for you, in my mind, it's Jameson Taillon. That would be the guy to me.
Agreed.
Right? Is Ben Brown in the Cubs postseason bullpen?
That might be a better question.
That's probably...
Is he on the playoff rotation? Or right. Not the rotation, but roster.
Right. Is he in the postseason roster? I don't think we know that for sure, because you got to make it through the next 2 months healthy, which is very difficult to do for teams.
Agreed.
So, who knows if he's on the roster come playoff time? Because you could change your roster based on the series. And maybe there's a series where you think you need more right-handed arms in that bullpen. But... yeah, rotation, I would say no.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do want to touch on, while we have a couple minutes, what Jed Hoyer said about getting creative, though, because I feel like this is in that same vein. So let's listen to what he had to say on Sunday in the booth with Marquee about that very concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll be on the phones a ton. We'll try to be as creative as possible. I think there's some years that it's really obvious. You know, the handful of guys you're going to target, the sellers are obvious. I think this year... it's going to be a year you kind of have to be a little bit more creative. There's not as many obvious sellers, and there's a bunch of teams that are sort of in the margin. So I think that's how I'm looking at it. We have to be creative. We have to challenge ourselves to think about things differently. The good news is we have a really good team. We do have some needs and things we need to work to address, and we'll work really hard at that. But I like what we have on the field as well.
When you hear that, what do you think?
I think Jed understands that there are going to be a lot of teams, as we've talked about today, that think they're in it, even if they're not. And so if those teams that have players that you might be interested in acquiring aren't moving those guys, you have to be able to say, all right, what is our plan B? What is our backup option? And I think it's not just the Cubs. There are a lot of teams that need starting pitching, and you're not going to land the number one or number two guy on your list. That's where your Adrian Housers come in. That's where he's part of the equation, because a team might have to go acquire an Adrian Houser and play the depth game more than the high-level production game.
Right.
Because this year's market, it's just not as stacked with elite-level talent, or talent that you are willing to give up two of your top 10 prospects for. That guy just isn't available this year. And you could say Sandy was 3 years ago, but this version of Sandy might not get you the return that we thought, you know, back at that time.
Right, and I still think either he sets the market or the Marlins hold on to him to get a better return given his recent performance. But I do...
almost like the Sox did for Garrett Crochet.
Or Chris Sale.
There you go.
Let's kick it way back. Yeah. So when I consider that, and I think the Chris Sale trade was a good example then of the return you should get for a guy like that. I think the Garrett Crochet trade was a good example now of what you should get and what your expectations are for that talent. I also think that it might be a case where you have the big league talent for big league talent. Maybe it's just a swap of fits in some of these. Does that mean it's a one for one? No. I think players of need will still demand more of a return than that. But you might see that happen where you're parting with a guy who you were familiar with, who you thought might have helped your team make the playoffs, but that team decided that the other individual was a better need or fit for that team.
Yeah, you talk. Where are your areas of depth? Where can you trade from? Right,
afford
you trade
to
from
lose
strength.
Somebody.
Right, like that's what you have to start thinking of if you're a president of baseball operations or GM at some point. It's like, all right, what can we afford to lose and still be a team that can be able to compete for a World Series? Because as we mentioned, the Cubs and like six other teams have a wide open opportunity to win the World Series this year. You don't want to move a guy that reduces your chances of doing that.
Agreed. That's Russ Dorsey. I'm Layla Rahimi. I see him in the room. Curtis Granderson is here. He's taking time to spend with us, and he has a great initiative that he is taking part of and that you can join in on as well. You want to see him, he's on next. And also, tonight the Cubs begin that series against the Royals that we mentioned at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:30. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer have the first pitch at 7:05. On The Score in the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network, the Granny Man is next. We get to talk more baseball with Curtis. I'm excited. You should be too. It's next on The Score.